Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with J.D. Cecilia, Director of the DoD Lean Six Sigma Program Office. Joining us in our conversation from IBM is Monica Painter. J.D., I think it's important to note that the term Lean Six Sigma is actually the combination of two terms, two management terms, one being Lean and the other Six Sigma. Before we get into DoD-specific efforts in this area, can you spend just a few moments describing the origins of each of these different approaches and kind of like their philosophical roots, then tell us how they complement each other to drive the culture of continuous improvement?
Sure. First of all, lean is just what it sounds like. It means you're taking away the excess. You're taking away the fat, if you will, of a process, the waste of a process, the non-value-added steps of a process. And it's basically focused on speed and efficiency. And it's a fantastic methodology that works extremely well in almost every process you can imagine. People use lean in their daily lives, and they don't call it lean, but they simply take out unnecessary steps. You know, both Lean and Six Sigma together are focused on the customer and, you know, what the customer views as value. So lean is really just eliminating the waste, non-value added, extraneous steps. And there's a number of principles that go with that. First one would be identify what creates value from the eyes of the customer, not from those who are working the process, but in the eyes of the customer. The second one would be identify all of the steps in the process. One of the most interesting parts of conducting a project is when we're asking those who are running a process to identify the steps. And they normally give you the first four steps. And you say, so that's all that occurs in this process. And they go, well, no, I forgot about this. Okay, let's add that. And then I forgot about that. That's part of this process too. And by the time you get done process mapping, you've probably got what you thought was a four-step process turns out to be a 24-step process. So the very first enlightenment really comes when they map the process. After we do that, we take a look at what makes the process flow and how do products or services move through a process? What makes them flow? Always focusing on a continuous flow. There should be no bottlenecks or unnecessary delays. Which leads to the next principle is that it's always pulling. In other words, the customer is demanding this service or product, and that's why it's flowing through the process. It's not because the process just got the switch turned on and today we're going to crank out whatever. It's because someone's asking for it. And the last one is you're always striving to improve this process by eliminating waste. And when you eliminate waste, you increase the speed. You eliminate waste, you create more efficiency. And so you're continually viewing your process with an eye towards lean, which is speed and efficiency. So lean is really the first thing you always do whenever you're looking at evaluating a process. The next thing would be Six Sigma, the term coined by Motorola a number of years ago in the 80s, which simply said we're going to look at a process to eliminate defects. And by doing so, we have a better product at the end. And it really had nothing to do with applying any sort of statistical measures at that point. It was a mindset, actually, of standardizing whatever you did so that you were consistently producing the same product every time. So we compare the two methodologies, but we complement each other with applying both of them to the same process. And we like to do it in that sequence, too. It makes no sense to perfect a wasteful process. So we lean the process out first, and then we make it standard so it's consistent, so you have a fast, efficient, and quality product.
So, J.D., you use the term process quite a bit in that description. So when you look to apply these approaches, what types of processes most benefit from this type of approach, either only lean, only Six Sigma, or both combined?
Well, first of all, a lot of folks first will say that they don't have a process. And so when we go in to try and improve an organization, we say, well, what are your processes? They say, well, we don't have one. What they're really saying is, I don't have one documented. The first thing we do is identify what it is you're producing. Who's your customer? We ask them, well, what does your customer think of your product? Well, we don't know. Well, how about if you ask them? And that helps really set the parameters on what our targets are. I've done a number of projects where there was no feedback mechanism to find out how well they were performing. And so we did a survey and we asked the customers, we said, well, what do you think of these products? And the results were surprising. It was out of the five products that they produced, they only found three of them had any value. So we eliminated two product lines, which freed up those resources now to work on the other three. And it was amazing how much quality was increased as well, because now they could devote more time to it. So first we look at it from a lean perspective, then we apply the Six Sigma process. Now, back to your question of do we do one or the other, it's very situation dependent. But I would say that if you, at the very least, always look at it first through lean and then through Six Sigma, and if it's not applicable, don't do it. But I would always say that there's room for both of them.
Backtracking just a bit, JD, can you tell us more about a DoD strategy for continuous process improvement, or CPI, and a little bit about what was the impetus behind CPI and why DoD chose Lean Six Sigma as its method of choice?
I think to answer that question, we have to go back a number of years, probably to the May 2006 timeframe, when our Deputy Secretary of Defense, Gordon England, issued a memorandum to the entire Department of Defense promoting the use of CPI in the workforce. He had a history in private industry of successfully deploying that methodology in his organization. And then he was the Secretary of the Navy, and he deployed it there as well. So he had a long history of success using the Lean Six Sigma methodology. And then as he was moved to the Deputy Secretary position, he wanted to institute something that he knew worked. And he also knew that it had a great applicability toward the processes within the Department of Defense. So in May of 06, he issued the memorandum that said, I'd like you all to consider using this methodology. However, he realized that he needed to be a little bit more directive in order to get the movement embedded across the organizations. And so he issued another directive in April of 07 that said, I really want you to use Lean Six Sigma, and I'd like you to stand up an office within your organization. And he put out some specific training objectives. And then this finally gained the most momentum, May 2008, when Secretary England signed a Department of Defense directive that Lean Six Sigma would be the primary tool for the organizations to use for continuous process improvement.
Looking at the broader entity, I understand that DoD has some 42 different and distinct organizations. So I would assume implementing Lean Six Sigma in the DoD could be difficult and complex. Given that change of such a magnitude and complexity requires leadership support at the highest levels, could you elaborate on the extent to which senior DoD leadership supports this CPI Lean Six Sigma initiative and how they are involved?
That is a great question, because it hits on the point that we talked about earlier, that if the leadership doesn't support this, your methodology doesn't have much of a chance of success. And with the deputy secretary, we have the type of support we need. Now, each of the services have their own chain of command and leadership, and they were using this methodology years before the deputy secretary ever issued these memorandums. So the civilian and uniform leadership within the services have embraced it. Now, they say that the sphere of influence is about 4 years per general officer or senior executive, and that's because their tours are about 3 to 4 years, and then even after they leave, its residually importance is still felt. In the services now, they have gone through 2 or 3 generations of general officers and senior leadership. So you can say with a fair amount of confidence that in most of the services, this methodology is around to stay. It's not the same case at the undersecretary level yet, because we're still on our first generation of supporters. So I would say from the leadership perspective, we have the right people engaged at the right level. We will only know in time how well that is, but right now the future looks good for about the next 4 years.
As you just mentioned, JD, Lean Six Sigma is at across the DoD is at varying levels of deployment. Can you tell us a bit more about some of the more critical DoD-wide Lean Six Sigma projects, and what have been some of your key success stories?
Well, the first point about the varying levels of maturity actually is what we use to describe a deployment. It is varied from having just understood what the terms LSS stand for, what the acronym stands for, to having a senior executive as their leader or general officer as their leader and having a full office supported by trained master black belts. What we're trying to do is level out that maturity level by taking the best practices from those that are very mature and helping give a leg up to those who are just starting. Now, as far as the different success stories, the one that is probably the most prominently talked about now is the MRAP, which is a mine-resistant and ambush-protected vehicle. What that translates to is that every time we produce an MRAP, somebody is going to be able to sustain an improvised explosive device or a direct round. And the reason is because it's armored to the degree that the occupants are safe from shrapnel, giving the soldiers, sailors, airmen, whoever are in the vehicles, a better chance of survival if they were just simply in an up-armored Humvee. The success of that is that when the depot was first baselined of what they could produce, it was 5 a day. Now, of course, the need is for thousands. So they had a goal of hitting 50 a day, and it took them just over a year using about 7 different iterations of this process improvement methodology until they didn't go from 5 to 50 in one swath. They went from 5 to 12, to 12 to 22, to 22 to 37, and finally they hit 50 a year later. But what that meant is 50 MRAPs were coming off the line at the end of the day, which meant 50 vehicles were heading to the units overseas, which meant people were coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan alive and with their limbs. So that's one that I like to point to, that it has a direct reflection on the safety and effectiveness of our warfighter. The other ones that you can look to, and the services have done a great job with that, is availability of aircraft. As you know, our aircraft are very sophisticated, a lot of electronics, and they get used very high op tempo, and they're just used extensively. Well, every time you take an aircraft off for a scheduled maintenance, it basically is one less from the fleet or the squadron that's no longer available, which means someone downrange is not getting the support. The F-18, for example, went through a center barrel exchange maintenance program that was taking 700 and some days to get done. By the time they got done, they were down to around 200 and some days, which meant they cut nearly 2 years of time off of the availability of that aircraft. So what they're doing is it's not only saving lives, but it's also putting the right assets in theater to support the warfighter or their warfighter equipment. So those are, I mean, there's thousands. There's literally right now, we collect metrics every month, and we are above 10,000 completed projects throughout the services, agencies, and organizations. So that's 10,000 problems solved. That's 10,000 processes improved. And with each month, we gain hundreds more because everybody's doing it now. We take another one like the security clearance reform. As you know, to work in the Department of Defense, there's a certain level of security clearance that you should have before you're able to work in the department or have access to classified information. Well, the standard time to get that done was excess of a year. So what happened was either people were not coming on active duty or they were coming on active duty without the required clearance, which meant they couldn't have access to the certain pieces of classified equipment or spaces, which basically affects the efficiency and effectiveness of the organization. So we're working right now on a process that will reduce that from over a year to a number of months. And so those are the kind of things that may not have the impact, the kinetic impact of a weapon system, but they're providing soldiers, sailors, and airmen to the front and to support the processes that do support the warfighter.
It strikes me that these are not incremental improvements, but really dramatic improvements. You know, when you talk about going from 5 to 50 over the course of time, reducing a process from a year to a couple of months, I mean, these are not trivial changes.
No, they are significant. I like the term exponential that you use because that's ideally, that is what this methodology will produce. But where we really stress is getting exponential returns on your investment. So from 5 to 50 is exponential, and it occurred in a one-year period of time. That is significant. And if you were to calculate the benefits of that, it would be exponential. Only time will tell, you know, what the actual savings and benefits will be, but each year it will increase.
Well, J.D., that's just fantastic. You know, listening to you describe this, it strikes me that the successful deployment of a Lean Six Sigma program is not really an end, but rather a beginning, meaning that its success is about driving it into the culture of the organization. So with this, how do you embed this into an organization, and what's been your change management strategy in driving this into the culture of the DoD?
That's a great question because this is not a one-year project. This is not a two-year project. This is a project that should have decades of returns. And the only way you're really going to do that is by shaping the culture. And I use that term shape as opposed to change because the Department of Defense has a warrior ethos for a culture. That's what makes us the greatest nation. It makes us the greatest warfighting capability in the world. So we don't want to change the warfighter culture. What we want to do is shape it so that it now looks at speed and efficiencies and replication as a way to continue to be the best fighting force in the world. So the approach that I would take with that is not unusual, and it's probably used in most successful deployments, and that is first start with education. Educate your leaders, educate the masses on what this is all about. Once they have an understanding of what it is, it makes perfect sense of why we're doing it. So education is really critical, and that's what we focus on. That's why our training effort was the first priority, was to get people trained in the methodology. And that's how you bring leaders on, is through subordinates saying, hey, this is really going to help us out. The next thing is to institutionalize it, and that is you start introducing this methodology at the earliest stage possible in the introduction to the workforce. In a deployment I had the privilege to lead a number of years ago, we included this in what they called their 101 course. So as they were learning about the organization, there was also a module on Lean Six Sigma. I think the next component to getting this widespread usage throughout the organization is to show the value of replication. There are very few unique problems out there. Sure. In an organization that big, can you imagine how many people are all using the same processes, probably struggling with the same defects? Mm-hmm. Yet if we fixed it in one place in the organization and halfway around the world, someone's starting from a blank page, how much faster we could help this other person solve that problem, because we've already been down there and we know what pitfalls to avoid. We know what techniques work. I mean, it's like giving them the 70% solution on day one. So replication will really speed up a lot of things as far as embedding it into the culture. Ultimately, is to make it a way of living, a way of thinking. You begin to look for waste in whatever you do. And once you start thinking that way, you can change the way that you are doing things so that it is more efficient.
Does Lean Six Sigma stifle innovation? We will ask J.D. Cecilia, director of the DoD Lean Six Sigma Program Office, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.